We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Good Tuesday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN 2 on Sirius XM Channel 80 and your smart speakers. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. Dare we say it? Dare we speak it into existence? Is baseball actually going to try and figure this thing out? Because they have been so baseball-y up until yesterday when it finally, like, okay, somebody move.
Well, I think what we're learning is that they may screw it up so much that we only get 48 games and then some sort of, you know, a grievance by the union. But, you know, at the end of the day, people won't care about all the minutia underneath it. They'll say, oh, there's going to be baseball, but the possibility of just 48 games. So it seems like there's going to be baseball, but can they figure it out to the point where there'll be more games, at least 30-some more games, and maybe an expanded playoffs to look a little more like a regular season would be?
Yeah, and I look at this now, after all we've been through with baseball and really every sport, the one thing that's always kind of been clear is we just need it back. And I really think at this point, and I could be wrong on this one and people could completely disagree, but what that sport looks like overall, to me, it seems so secondary at this point. It's just get it back in whatever form is most likely, is most able to work for you at the time period, and I'll figure it out from there. See, the NBA that basically agreed to it almost sight unseen in a lot of ways for certain players in certain aspects of this as they wait for the protocol to be rolled out and all this. For Major League Baseball, just get it back. How it looks is going to be the thing that matters to the people internally, but I feel like externally, it's just play ball. However much we get is however much we get.
So here was the latest thing that happened yesterday. According to Carl Ravitch, the Major League Baseball has made a new proposal to the Players Association, 76-game season with a 75% prorated salary and then playoff pool money. And something that some people, I think, is very significant is the idea of no draft pick compensation for signing a player. We've heard and seen a lot of players. Why haven't this guy signed yet? Because they're waiting till after the date, because they sign him after a certain date. Then they don't have to give that draft compensation.
Exactly.
And
that frees up
free agency a little more. But listen, we can talk about a million things, but it's always coming down to the money, because it's a 76-game season, but not a prorated salary at 100%. But 75% of your prorated salary for that 76 games. I'm sure the players are saying, if I'm playing 76 games, I want 100% of my prorated salary, what it would be over playing one game 76 times.
Here's what I'm not going to do is the simple math, because I've done enough of it in these proposals.
You have.
Okay? I'm tired of it. I'm tired of all the math. Basically, what baseball did is they threw another $200 million more into this, basically for the postseason. And that's something the players are going to say, well, because everybody is concerned about a second round of the coronavirus hitting and maybe knocking away the postseason, then the players wouldn't get that money. So basically the original offer, this is what the players are looking at from baseball, was 82 games played and a player's salary of a little over $1 billion with $200 million in playoffs. This offer is 76 games with a little under $1 billion in salary, but $443 million if the playoffs are played. So you're kind of rolling the dice if you're the player, saying, okay, if you get to the postseason, there's going to be more money there available. If there is no postseason, if it gets wiped out, then there's not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, we're moving the money around. We're sliding the money again, and I'm not doing my simple math to do this anymore. Hopefully it gets figured out.
Well, and I think what it's basically boiled down to is this. The owners have settled in on an amount of money they feel comfortable paying out overall.
Right.
Whatever that looks like, however many games that takes, and whatever the postseason format looks like, can be up to the players on this one, and how many other things in there do you get? The draft pick compensation, is that something that's enough of a win, especially we know with the larger scope of what's to come after this season?
Next season, when they have to do a CBA.
Is that enough that matters to you to get this done in that regard? Is the potential for expanded playoffs and more teams to be able to be involved in that enough incentive to you, incentive for you in there? Some of the things that they've talked about with at-risk players and their ability to opt out. Now, what is defined as at-risk seems loose at best right now in the way that it was described in here in a lot of ways, but their ability to opt out, still collect service time, still collect, you know, not lose any money in that situation, is that valuable enough to them since health and safety has been such a thing? So it seems to be the amount of money is more or less settled on, with some wiggle room, obviously, for specifics. It's, does everything else, those sweeteners, matter enough to you as the MLBPA to go forward with one of these?
Well, that's the crux here, right? Because MLBPA Executive Director Tony Clark told our Carl Ravitch that he's waiting to get a consensus from the players on a counteroffer. And if they don't have a consensus on a counteroffer, or if the MLB owners aren't interested in a counteroffer, our Jeff Passan basically says, fine, you're going to get this, and here's what it is.
Words from a high-ranking official today that were uttered to me, there will be baseball. If it happens, though, in the absence of a deal between the sides, it could be in the form of a 48-game season, which MLB has the ability to implement without the consent of the players. At that point, the players would just show up, play the game, file a grievance for the fact that MLB did not play a full season, and this thing would be fought out behind closed doors.
So again, we can, it sounds to me like Tony Clark and the Players Association are going to try and see if there's any more wiggle room by making some sort of a counteroffer, and see how hard and fast baseball is in either doing the 76 games with 75% prorated salary, or just shove the 48-game schedule in their face and say, we'll do it. Here's what's playing out, and you want to sue us afterwards? Fine, we'll figure that out later. Right? That's sort of the way this plays out.
Yeah, and the super interesting part of that is, so if the 48-game option came up, it would be the $1.03 billion in salary with no playoff money in here.
Right.
Again, the original offer, 82 games, $1.03 billion in salary, and $200 million if playoffs were played. So you'd be playing almost half the amount of games and making roughly the same amount of money, obviously sans the playoff money, which wouldn't be expanded playoffs at that point, so it wouldn't include anyone, everyone to begin with and all of that. So it's one of those things that it sounds like that would be the ugliest option, because again, a grievance, the idea of the Major League Baseball Players Association and Major League Baseball doing anything behind closed doors at this point is laughable.
Right.
Like, that we even think that that is remotely possible is hilarious.
I think their version of a closed door is either a screen door or a door that's slightly ajar, and we can just pull it back and see everything that's going on.
Yeah, you know we can hear you in there, right?
I already did some simple math.
Oh, God. Did you? Well, you said you weren't going to do this, and then you did it anyway.
This man doesn't know how to quit.
So 76 games, if a player makes $1 million, 76 games fully prorated is $469,000, okay? If you went down to the 48 games and they played and that was prorated – for $1 million player, be $296,000. And if you went the 75% prorated at 76 games, it'd be $351,000. So it means nothing.
Thanks.
Yeah, so you really just couldn't stop yourself from doing that physically.
I wanted to see the
difference. How are you not a CPA?
I wanted to see the difference of $170,000 to $1 million player from 76 games prorated to 48 games prorated. And then the 75% obviously is somewhere in the middle. I knew basically where the number is going to be. I had to do it. And I had to try it. But I guess the point of it is I just did that, and I'm not a $1 million player. I'm not a $500,000 player. I'm not a $10 million player. But how many players are doing what I just did?
I'm sure a lot of them.
That's the point. So they're doing that. And are they being, what people are saying, are you being a little close-minded by just doing that? What am I making right now instead of looking at the bigger picture of this thing? Because if I'm doing this with my calculator, or let me just say, make me sound smart, doing it in my head, you know, all the players are doing it as well to see what the different options are of the money they're going to make.
What I'm fascinated about, and baseball is so different than almost any other sport in this way. Let's say it's a 70-game schedule or a 48-game schedule. What happens if someone hits 400?
What
happens if someone hits
400? Why are you going down that road? It's not going to count. You know it's not going to count.
I mean.
But it's not. It's not
going to
count.
It's not going to.
Let's not throw that tangent.
I mean, I find it fascinating because baseball is so driven by the numbers more than any other sport.
When we discuss that more, make sure you let us know, and Mike and I are going to take that day off.
Okay.
I want to do that when the deal's done and all this, because again, like all of those to me are actually kind of fun conversations about how we balance all these plates. When we get baseball back, the problem is that the many guys that my dad just talked about are doing that with their salary, because that $1 million mark is significant, because I think we said something like 60 or 65% of the league makes $1 million or less in all of that. So the meat of you, as we always talk about when it comes to negotiations, it's the meat of your constituency is making that amount of money, trying to maximize that amount of money, because the long-term thought process isn't in the cards for everyone. Even in baseball, where the careers probably skew a little bit longer than most other very violent pro sports.
Yeah.
In this one, you're still thinking about, all right, what are my short-term games? Well, I have the opportunity to make money.
And that's the other thing. There will be players that decide it just won't be worth it, because especially if they're going to be a free agent next season, why would I risk in a shortened season throwing my shoulder out or blowing out my elbow?
And if they're not a high-risk person and they don't think it's worth it, well, we can tell you how much it's going to cost them as well from that.
Math.
How about that?
Coming up, the NBA season, yes, will actually start a little over 7 weeks from now, and now we know what happens when a player does test positive for the coronavirus. We'll get to that after this.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr. Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. So, got a lot to talk about here, because one person a lot of people have been waiting to hear from, especially in college football with everything that's going on across the country, is the most prominent voice right now in college football, right? It was Nick Saban, but I think at all point we can understand it's probably Dabo Swinney with the things he's done at Clemson over the last few years, and a perennial in the playoffs, perennial in the championship game, and winning several titles at the expense of Nick Saban in Alabama. And the juxtaposition was his young 21-year-old quarterback, when all of this first went down and the killing of George Floyd and the protests across the country, put out an incredibly thoughtful and really well put together statement for a young man, and he was leading the charge. And then Dabo responded somewhat. And then there was a story that came out that in 2017, one of his coaches, assistant coaches, Danny Perriman, used a racial slur, the N-word, in a back and forth with a player. And the story came out. And then yesterday, Dabo put together, was it, Junior, a 14-minute video?
A 14-minute long video response to all of this.
A 14-minute long video response.
Which I somehow managed to watch all of.
There you go.
And I respect you for it. And so all of this and what he said in that is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. First of all, Dabo specifically wanted to address the incident that involved the assistant coach and a player and the use of the racial slur. And in Dabo's mind, he wanted to make it clear what it was and what it wasn't.
I would fire a coach immediately if he called a player an N-word. No questions asked. That did not happen. Absolutely did not happen. It has not happened. A story broke this week, and the story was not in context. But what happened was I didn't know anything about it. It was a coach and his player, Coach Pierman and DJ, off doing a drill in a part of the field. Wasn't in front of the whole team or anything like that. And Coach Pierman was correcting DJ. He didn't do the right thing. And I think DJ another player was talking to DJ, or DJ was yelling at the player. And DJ, said something he probably shouldn't have said. And, he said, I blocked the wrong effing N-word. And Coach Pierman, thought he was saying it to him, and he's mad, and he reacted, and he basically, in correcting him, repeated the phrase. And he said, "We don't say we blocked the wrong effing N-word." And he repeated it. And he shouldn't have done that. There's no excuse for even saying that. It doesn't matter what the context is. But there is a big difference. He did not call someone an N-word.
So,
well, I mean, to me, there's a difference, but they're both wrong.
Correct.
I mean, so it's just a matter
and Dabo said that.
And Dabo did say that, of calling somebody that and repeating it. It was DJ Greenlee was a tight end that was, he kept referring to DJ, was the player in question here. You don't even repeat the word. I mean, you don't, as a white person, you don't say the word, at all, even in repeating it here. But I do see what Dabo is trying to explain. He didn't call him that. He repeated something saying, we don't say that, and repeated the phrase. So both wrongs to the degree you take it, from there.
Well, and then, to be fair, DJ and I think several other players also said on Twitter that he did not call him that.
Yeah, right, I guess that's the part to me that didn't really need more explaining, because I felt like those players had been pretty, DJ had been pretty upfront in his explanation about that. What was in question here was what level of accountability followed after. What level of, because there's, again, Dabo talked about a lot of things over the course of this, but he said that there are two words that they don't tolerate around their facility. One is GD and the other is the N-word in all of this. And I will personally never be comfortable with a white person policing the N-word being said by black people. Like, that just... Doesn't seem like your place, not now, not ever. So that's kind of the non-starter for me in all of this. But to be policing it, we heard about an incident where Dabo was showing a prospective defensive backs coach around, and he came into the locker room and there was, music playing that was making use of that word in a way that he came down on some players about or wasn't happy about. I guess we're going to say the least on that. And so if you're going to display that level of displeasure when it comes up from a player, certainly when a white coach is the one saying the word, you would expect there to be more accountability than it seems like what they got in that situation, which was apparently an apology in private to that player, but nothing addressed to the team in that instance.
Well, according to the comments, Dabo said he wasn't even aware that it had happened.
Right, because it was on a separate field.
Yeah.
Had not even known it happened until a player came up and told him about it. I mean, we were talking about this off air a little more of a broader conversation of sometimes of it, it just seems overall, if I'm using the right verbiage, it seems like Dabo isn't aware or aware of some things or doesn't seem aware of some things and just kind of does, the coaching thing. I don't have social media. I'm a football coach. I don't know what these shows are on TV. You know what? I kind of get that feel sometimes. Players, don't get me wrong. Players love him.
Yeah.
They love him. And at some point, should we say maybe that's all that matters? Is that he brings players into a program and players love the way they're treated there and love the way things go there. I'm sure not 100% of players, but it just seems like sometimes the out of touchness of a head coach on outside issues, it gets a little tired for me, I guess.
Well, it just gets convenient when football coaches decide that they are just football coaches or more than that, and they're teachers and all these other things that we tend to latch on and laud to coaches. The problem with this whole conversation around Dabo is any slight against him or any criticism of an action of his is seen by the people that defend him as an indictment of the entire man.
Right.
And obviously there are parts and comments that Dabo's made in the past about other things that I've certainly had disagreements with, and that's fine, but at the core of it, people keep going back to, the pause program that people talk about that Dabo outlined in the video, and, the young men that have come up through Clemson's program and left on the other side better for it. Like, those things are, one doesn't mean the other. Because Dabo has fallen short in this situation in a way that is frustrating doesn't mean that all of the rest of those things aren't helpful. Doesn't mean that players don't know Dabo's character or don't know that he's for them in these situations. It just means that in this one spot, in a spot that has changed, that has certainly, again, rapidly accelerated itself to the forefront of conversations for the larger portion of the world. Certainly black people have been talking about this and trying to get this out there. But we know the last couple of weeks have been different in a lot of ways. Dabo has fallen short in this spot. And when you are the coach that has done so much for guys in other areas of their life, and when you are the coach that prides yourself on being more than just a football coach in a lot of those instances, I think that makes it even, even harder to swallow if you're a player looking at him and getting the answers you've gotten now, which unfortunately fall short in this area when it is someone that you value and respect like that.
Well, yeah, the whole incident came out with Danny Perriman when a former wide receiver, Kenyon Tuttle, put it out there on Twitter. And he also, that receiver once said, Daddy, Daddy, excuse me, Dabo, suggested that the players not participate in a 2016 sit-in on campus. And he also addressed that,
yeah,
apparently.
Dabo also addressed that in the video and said he never discouraged anyone from doing anything. He said he wanted to make the players aware that the minute they went out to that protest, his message was, if you're going to go out and protest, know exactly what it is you're going out there to protest. Be aware of that, because when you go out there, a Clemson football player being out there is going to garner more attention. You're going to be asked to be on the news and all these things. Now, you know, again, how you put that and how you phrase that in a meeting can go a long way into how it's received in all those, and that's certainly something that Dabo controls in a lot of that. So that was how he addressed that particular issue. Yes.
And then there was the issue, apparently he was wearing a shirt, it was photographed wearing a shirt that said "Football Matters" over the weekend, and he said any insinuation that I was trying to mock the Black Lives Matter movement is just an attack on my character. I wholeheartedly support Black Lives Matter. I don't think that's quite adequate enough, because it's a shirt he's worn apparently forever.
Yes, the National Football Foundation has a program or a thing that they were doing, you know, about Football Matters.
Yeah, and Trevor Lawrence even came out and said that as well. I guess there's just, where's the awareness of where we are now? What sign you're seeing people holding up all the time, and then you're wearing something that says something different matters. And while the explanation I get, but I guess it comes back again to the awareness of, and that's where I think the days of, you know, because you're right. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I'm a ball coach. I don't have, you know, my face, or, you know, however they mess up the names on purpose to say, I'm not on social media. I'm just a football coach. But then you can't say you're a teacher of young men in life as well, because, you know, that's outside of football. You know, there has to be more than that. So I think we got to get past that a little bit. But you're right as far as the good. I mean, we just had an example of that. It's Drew Brees, right?
Yeah.
Drew Brees does a ton of good, where he has been and what he has done. But in this particular matter, there are those that felt he didn't understand the message. And Drew Brees even acknowledged that as well. So it's not a character assassination on the entire man, but that's sometimes how it's taken. Oh man, you start to sling one arrow at a guy the way he did something, and you're assassinating his entire character. We definitely don't want to be going down that road.
No, well, I think the ultimate compliment is that people value you enough to care about what you say and be disappointed when they feel like you've fallen short. If Dabo was someone whose opinion wasn't valued by the people that played for him, or wasn't valued by the people around there, this wouldn't resonate nearly as much, even though he is one of the biggest coaches in the country. But it's because of all that, that if you're a player, maybe you can look at this and say, all right, you know what? I we get so much from you in these other regards, and I'm able to count on you in so many other ways. In this area, I would just like you to listen and be willing to learn a little bit more. I think those things are all appropriate to say at once.
Yes, and I think that for the vast majority, and there's never 100% in any situation, especially when you're dealing with so many kids and a lot of them vying for playing time and they're not getting it. There's always going to be someone that is not 100% on board, but for the most part, it feels like Dabo's players do understand that he cares about them and that he has their best interests in mind, but they would just like a little more, perhaps, understanding on certain social situations.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big issue, especially with the large portion of the college football population that is Black, that we know plays this game at that level, we know plays this game at Clemson, and so being aware and having an awareness of those is important when it comes to the issues of how that's dealt with within the team with a case like Coach Pierman. As you just mentioned, guys vying for playing time, guys in the power structure that we know exists in college football where it's difficult for players to speak up. Yep. And so Dabo in this instance and the coaching staff in this instance, you owe it to the players that are in your care to say, all right, yeah, we've heard from countless programs with Iowa. We heard Kirk Ferentz say that players currently in the program are less likely to speak up at certain times about those things. So what does that mean? That there is more responsibility on someone in Dabo who has been entrusted with these young lives that are coming on campus that he claims to be a molder of and all these things. When instances like that come up, you have got to punish and you have got to make sure there is accountability when someone steps over that line, like like a coach because players, it's not like the NFL where a player can just stare you in the eye and say, no, I'm not messing with that. There's fear of lost playing time.
There's a power dynamic.
There's all these things that go into that that make that a difficult prospect. And so, I guess that's the thing is Dabo knows the responsibility that he has. Yeah. He displays it in so many other ways. And so in this spot, we expect that same level of dedication, that same level of it mattering. And at the very least, if it's something now that he's not aware of or it's something that he's not used to dealing with, a willingness to say, all right, I've got to better educate myself on this. I've got to have conversations with my players, which it sounds like he's having,
right,
and try and be better about the way that I deal with this going forward.
And we'll see how that plays out going forward. Meanwhile, we believe the NFL is going forward and it looks like they're going to try and find a way to get to training camp at the end of the July calendar month, but we don't think one person is going to be there for one team, and that would be running back Dalvin Cook for the Minnesota Vikings, essentially saying he is not going to show up for any workouts without, quote, a reasonable extension. The Pro Bowl running back no longer will participate in any team-related activities. Of course, there are none at the moment, so basically what he's saying is I won't be showing up for training camp. Basically, our Adam Schefter, hearing from a source, he's out. Without a reasonable extension, he will not be showing up for training camp or beyond. As all of this, including the Dabo talk, is straight talk by Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And the interesting thing about Dalvin Cook is the position that he plays.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's a running back. He's also a very productive running back. In fact, our fine research department, Bush, put together some very interesting numbers. The top five scrimmage yards per game last season, Christian McCaffrey was first. Dalvin Cook was second. Derrick Henry was third. Leonard Fournette was fourth. Now, Christian McCaffrey in 2020 just got a new contract. He'll be making $16 million. Derrick Henry, who is still going to be on the franchise tag, if nothing else, is going to make $10.3 million. Leonard Fournette is in one of the last years of his contract. He's going to make $6.3 million. And Dalvin Cook, as a second-round running back, is scheduled to make $1.6 million. So you can certainly understand from Dalvin Cook's perspective, hey, look at all these yards, and I'm behind only Christian McCaffrey. By the way, third ever 1,000 season last year, 1,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving, and only he's averaging more scrimmage yards per game than me, I should be making more money. And that is a reasonable assumption, especially when the Minnesota Vikings just threw an extra $30 million
at
Kirk Cousins this offseason when he had a guaranteed contract for a high number going into this season anyway. But are you going to pay it if you're the Minnesota Vikings because of the position?
And again, he's the last year of his deal. It was a second-round pick,
yeah.
So it's a four-year deal. He didn't have that option year to deal with, so next year would be his fourth year. Has not played a complete season yet in four games, 11 games, and last year 14 games. But in those 14 games, I mean, yeah, over 1,100 yards, 50 receptions, I believe as well, 53 receptions. So catches the ball out of the backfield. There is no doubt. He carries a load. And for a team that ran a little bit more than they passed last year, they do like the running game. And he has been a huge, huge part of that. But, I mean, we look at the top guys that got paid, but you also look at a guy like Melvin Gordon who tried to hold out while he was under contract and no go. He ended up, you know, basically going back losing that situation. Now, Minnesota definitely needs Dalvin Cook, but how far are they willing to go to try and keep him?
Yeah, it's tough because in the past I've always been like, well, you pay what you've got and how you're structured, right? Meaning when the Dallas Cowboys were paying Ezekiel Elliott at the time, they were structured as a team that had gone through him on their offense. They were getting ready to transition to the offense we saw last year that made much more use of Dak.
And now they're not going to pay Dak. It's crazy.
In a lot of this, which is wild, but we've seen this time and time again. And for Minnesota, the way that they've invested, it would look like they're a passing team, but we know the way Mike Zimmer operates. Like I jokingly said to someone yesterday, I feel like if Mike Zimmer could go down and hand Dalvin Cook quarterback money, he would, because that's how much the run game has meant to Zim over the last few years.
He fired an offensive coordinator for not running it enough.
Yeah, I mean, that is how much this aspect of football matters to the guy coaching this football team, so that's got to be factored into it. But man, I just don't know what about the recent trends in the running back market indicate that you're going to get anything. Like, you could end up getting a pay increase based on what you were going to make, but, and he didn't say he wanted a market setting contract or anything
like reasonable.
That. He said reasonable. So what, I guess what does that look like now for a running back is maybe the thing we need to determine.
I mean, you look where the top ones are. How far down do you go till you get to $10 million a year, right? Because Christian McCaffrey went over that. We know other guys that are over that. Zeke's over that. Gurley had been over that. So is that a number? Is that a reasonable number for him? Because, you know, we can talk about the position, but then I think you have to throw in just what we've been talking about, the importance of that position to that team and that coach. And it seems to be very important to Minnesota to have that running game. And Dalvin Cook is the man there. Both running the ball, like I said, catches it out of the backfield as well, which is an added bonus, but he runs the ball extremely well, averaged 4.5 yards a carry last year. So that position may be deemed a little more important in Minnesota under this current coaching staff than maybe some other teams may value it.
It's just interesting because you look at the way they've paid out on this team, and if you're giving all of this guaranteed money to Kirk Cousins over the last however many years, you would think a lot more of the offense would be going that route, and especially what they've had at the wide receiver spot. Obviously, no more Stephon Diggs, but everything you had with Adam Thielen there, the tight end room that you've got there, certainly other weapons that you've added this offseason there, it seems like it's primed to be an offense that doesn't have to work through the running game, but we know what it looked like last season for them. It's not like we have to go back to far that find back far to find that.
I was with you. And obviously you can make the same case for Derrick Henry, who's also on that list that I just talked about. I mean, no one was doing the running back thing better than Derrick Henry. And yet he finds himself looks like going into this season. I mean, we haven't heard any movement about a contract, a long-term contract between the Tennessee Titans. And we're getting close to 30 days out. I mean, July 15th is the deadline.
You know, and then you risk if you don't give him a new deal, if he sits out and doesn't play, I mean, then where do you go? Have you burned all your bridges there where he doesn't come back? Now you could tag him if you want, but I guess if he doesn't play all season, you know, you don't get the season. So I doubt it would go that far to it. Yeah. Again, this is where we go. Do we see a guy actually sit out an entire season? He made it sound like I'm not going back unless there's a reasonable offer on the table.
Reasonable is such an interesting
reasonable
word.
Reasonable is an interesting word.
To me, when you say reasonable, it sounds like okay, but just give me a little taste.
Yeah.
Right? That's what it sounds like to me. I'm hearing from Dalvin Cook. Like, you better. Just a little something.
Come on, sweeten the pot.
Sweeten the pot a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to say, meet me halfway on here because we had heard in the past from other guys that I wanted to be a market setter when it came to Le'Veon and some of these guys coming out. They had the whole position in mind. Reasonable sounds a little bit different.
Totally agree. And the Derrick Henry one I find much more fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
He did the thing, and he might not get the money he wants because of the thing he was doing it at the position he was doing it at. Coming up, much more on Major League Baseball and what's going on with whether or not there'll be a season.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
We're delighted to be joined now by Tennessee head football coach Jeremy Pruitt. Jeremy, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. Just as the kids are beginning to come back, what sort of conversations are you having with so many of your players as they're sort of watching the world change around them right now?
You know, our guys started coming in last week, and we started testing them on Wednesday, and on Thursday night we had a team meeting and really discussed, you know, what was going on. We had previously done one on Zoom the week before on a Friday, but it's not the same when you're in a room. It was a very powerful meeting for our team and the players on our team. And I'm going to tell you there was a lot of, angry young men in there. There was a lot of guys that had a lot of built up rage and frustration. And, we felt like it was the time and place to give our guys a floor to express how they were feeling and to share with the other guys on the team. And I felt like it was a great opportunity for those guys, and for us moving forward as a program.
And coach, I guess moving forward, we've seen so many places commit. Was there anything going forward that players said they wanted to do or accomplish or start to direct their efforts towards in that area? Or was this just a general conversation for people to kind of understand each other better?
Well, to me, the big thing is, and talking with our guys is, you know, a lot of people can put things out on social media. A lot of people can say things, but it's how we act upon them. It's our actions. And, you know, we're creating a really kind of a cultural committee within our program that's going to be led by T. Martin. And so we can continue to act upon it as a program, and really as a university.
Talking to Jeremy Pruin, a Tennessee head football coach. And then there was obviously that side, which is a huge issue to talk about. And then the other side is, oh, by the way, there's a pandemic going on and players being tested, people being tested all over the world. And we've already seen, coach, in other colleges, student athletes testing positive. So can you go down that, explain that a little bit, your testing program and how that's gone? And if you had any positive tests, how that's all being dealt with?
We brought in 72 guys last Wednesday, and of course we done the COVID test and the antibody test, and we brought in 19 other guys on Saturday, and they'll be over the next 10 to 14 days. There'll be probably 10 to 20 more guys come in. So we've not had any positives within our student athletes. We did have one graduate assistant that did test positive, and he's been quarantined for 14 days. So, you know, that's been a positive for us. Our guys started back to work voluntarily yesterday, and they'll continue to push forward.
Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee head football coach, with us. And obviously, coach, the Vols finished the season very strong, 6-0 down the stretch, a lot of positive momentum going into this season. Yet, of course, the pandemic breaks out, and we have to deal with that, and obviously the social unrest in the country over the killing of George Floyd. With all that as a backdrop, how different is this college football season going to be for you in the way you handle the players and what they're feeling?
Well, one thing that we do at Tennessee is everybody on our team has a voice. You know, it's kind of one of those deals to, you know, when we were all growing up, you done what the teacher said, you done what the coach said, and that was it. And there's probably a lot of times, whether it was on the field or off the field, you're probably sitting there saying, I wonder why we're doing it this way. Well, we have a culture in our program to where we want to ask the why. We want our players to know what to do, how to do it, and why it's important to do it that way on the field and off the field. And, you know, so we have a really within our program, there's a lot of communication that goes on. And it's been very positive, you know, and it will continue to be that way. We have a lot of really good leaders within our program, whether it's coaches, mentors, our player development, our players in itself. So we're excited about getting all of our guys together, and we're excited about the platform that we have at Tennessee to create change within our university, within our city, and within our conference. And we're excited about the football season itself.
Coach, I'm curious, you mentioned all that as a backdrop, asking the why. And so I'll ask you that, and you surprised your players at a march that a bunch of the players on your team had gone to and some actually spoke at. Why was it important for you to be out there with the guys that you coach?
Well, the march, I didn't tell the guys I was coming. You know, the march itself was really against police brutality. And, you know, over the last 3 months, or really you could go over the last 25 years. I mean, there's been certain circumstances that that's obviously taken place. And the instance with George Floyd was, I mean, that's what it was. So it's something that I'm absolutely against. I have lots of friends throughout college football, guys that I played with, I coached with, You know, and we've had lots of conversations over the last several weeks. And when you're sitting there talking to your colleagues, and they're very concerned about letting their children drive at night because of circumstances that are going on in our country. When you're sitting here and you have a team full of players that, you know, on any given night, you're concerned about things that could possibly happen to them. You know, it's something that we need to change, and it needs to be addressed within our country.
And certainly we've heard from so many people, it's not only listening, but actions by others outside the African-American community would be the things that make the difference. And I'm sure that so many of your players were very, very supportive of the fact that you walked with them or walked in that demonstration to let them know that your voice would be heard in this. Coach, it's obviously going to be a very interesting season on a lot of levels. We'll see how it all plays out, but it is underway for you guys at Tennessee. We appreciate your time this morning, and we appreciate your comments. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, guys.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. Very interesting where that went.
We're delighted to be joined by Broncos safety Justin Simmons, who has been a very active participant in the peaceful protests against what's going on with police brutality against people of color for a long time, and of course culminated with the spark point in the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Justin Simmons, Broncos safety. Justin, thanks for being with us. Thanks for putting up with that nonsense of those two songs we put together. On a much more serious tone, we appreciate your time. We know you've been protesting in Florida as well as Denver this past week. What was it that made you want to be such an active participant in what we've seen across the country?
Yeah, thank you. First, thank you guys for having me on the show. You know, it's really an honor. And to answer your question, yeah, it just, you know, there was something about, who knows, maybe just the buildup over, you know, the years, and then educating, you know, myself through the process of, you know, everything that was going on. And it's sad because, you know, unless you really go out and look for yourself, you know, the history of Black Americans in our country, you know, it's a long and dreadful and painful process for our African American, you know, brothers and sisters. And so, you know, after seeing what happened, obviously to George Floyd, I think, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, that it was that one incident. This has been a buildup, you know, for 400 plus years. And, you know, it seems like nothing is ever getting better. And I think the most frustrating part was there were peaceful protests before. You know, we were trying to awake America's eyes to police brutality, you know, racial inequalities that are happening still in this country, oppression, you know, systematic racism. And so I think it was, you know, for me, it was just apparent to with my current platform to make sure that, you know, I was standing for what I believe in. And it's just sad that, you know, this is still a reality in America.
And Justin, for a lot of this, it's been listening. And again, you've been in Florida, and then you went back to Denver and were part of the protest with your teammates and Vic Fangio. And speaking of listening, Vic Fangio had come out with a statement when this was all starting that he didn't believe there was the racial issues in the NFL. And listen, we on this show and others somewhat took him to task with that thought process. What did you have a chance to individually speak with him? I know your teammates did. How did that all work with Vic and him listening to you guys?
Yeah, we had a chance. Guys had a chance to listen to kind of his response in that regard. And, you know, one of the things I think that we have to do a better job of is, you know, obviously Vic came out and said what he said, very, very similar in regards to what Drew Brees came out and said what he said. The thing that I think I can appreciate the most is, I guess, the apology, but the want to listen after, realizing that, hey, it may not be exactly what I said. Let me go ahead. Let me listen, and then let me learn, and then let me lead in that regard. And so I think one of the things I appreciate was, you know, Vic said what he said, and then obviously he came out with another statement. But, you know, bigger than that, I think for me as a player who knows him and some other guys on the team, he came back, he had a team meeting, and he said, I realize, you know, my comments may have hurt some of you, so here, what – I would love to hear, you know, I would love to have some insight. I would love to hear why, you know, I was wrong. And I thought that was a big step because I genuinely believe that a lot of people do want better change. It's just unfortunate because, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You know, if you've never been through it, then there's no possible way, unless you educate yourself, that you would understand at that level.
Talking to Broncos safety Justin Simmons with us here on Golic and Wingo. And so all of that conversation culminated in your guys' whole team being a part of going out and protesting in Denver and certainly Vic there, but also seeing the support from John Elway even on the top end of this. How much does it mean now to see the whole organization sort of listening and buying in that regard as this goes forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see. It's great to see, some support. And I think the biggest thing moving forward is it's awesome seeing, you know, so many people come out and speak up and talk about the change that's needed and support behind it. And I think it's one thing to say it, and I think it'd be even powerful to kind of to back it up and whatever that looks like in terms of taking action. And so, you know, like I saw the post that, you know, Roger Goodell put out in response to the video that, you know, some of the players around the league, put out in terms of, you know, their stance and making a really powerful statement about how African-Americans are treated in our country. And obviously, like I said, saw his response, and it was a great response, but. I hope there's action to follow up with those types of responses. And, I hope that when push comes to shove, you know, they really are behind their players in the league when they want to take certain stances and stand out. And like I said, in that regard.
Well, and that leads us to a very interesting question as we're talking to Justin Simmons. A couple of questions, actually. And we appreciate you being with us this morning, the Broncos safety. Roger Goodell said we got it wrong in response to that player's video, and we support players' rights to protest. Adrian Peterson has already said he will take a knee this year, and he expects many other players to do so during the national anthem. So there's a couple of questions I have for you on that front. Number one, do you expect yourself and many other players in the NFL to do take a knee during the national anthem? And then the second question, I guess, is what should be done with the policy regarding the national anthem? Because it seems very ambiguous at this point.
Yeah, I think, I think it's so sad that when we come to the question of, like, you know, protesting and taking a knee, I don't want to have this long-winded response, but, you know, this is one of the things that I've had conversations with, my family, my close friends, so many people in my life that, like, didn't understand what, you know, taking a knee, what the thought process was, like, why. And it's crazy because anyone that, like I said, wants to look into it and not just look at it from their point of view, you know, Cap approached Nate Boyer and asked right. him, you know, what he could do differently, because obviously he knew that he was offending people and that wasn't, you know, the point that he was trying to get across. And, you know, Nate Boyer said, hey, man, you know, I talked to a couple of my, you know, my servicemen, my brothers, and, you know, we thought it'd be kind of like equal ground if you took a knee, because we do that out of respect to our fallen soldiers, right? And then that's where, I mean, the key word in that was respect.
Right.
And that's where Cap was like, all right, I'm not going to sit on the bench. What is where his protest started? And then he took a knee out of respect for our military men, for our soldiers that are obviously serving and allowing us to be able to be a part of this country and to do things that we want to do. And so, I mean, anyone that looks at that story, which Nate Boyer has, it's all on YouTube. Nate Boyer's went on multiple ESPN platforms.
Yeah, and we had him on, you know, last week. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy because you have him on there, and you hear what he's saying and you understand, like, hey, it's not about, you know, our military and things in that nature. And to push that even further, like, you know, we saw a lot of guys speak out of it when Drew Brees came out and said what he said. You know, sure, yes, I'm sure a lot of people's, you know, relatives and family members have served this country and died protecting this country. And we should be honoring them for that. But, you know, for a lot of African-American brothers and sisters in this country, their families did the same thing and returned to the States still being mistreated, you know, still having to deal with oppression, still having to do with racial inequalities. And so, you know, that flag doesn't mean the same thing for everyone, you know, where, you know, white people may look at it and say, hey, you know, this is about, you know, this flag means everything to me. It's given me so much. You know, there are a lot of black people that look at that flag, and while they're thankful there, you know, there's progress being made, it's still a reality of, like I said, the systemic racism and, you know, the oppression in America. And that is what, you know, the police brutality and the inequality, like those are the things that, you know, Cap was taking a knee for. So many other players were taking a knee for. So, yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, a lot of the guys around the league understand the platform that Cap has put out there, and that as a collective brotherhood in the NFL, you know, we come together and we figure out, you know, what powerful, you know, statement and change we want to make.
So with that going forward, I guess one more thing, I know we're up against it, but I do want to ask you this question because it's being talked about a lot, Justin Simmons. What would it mean to you if a team did sign Colin Kaepernick now?
Yeah, I think it would be huge, and everyone has their opinions on, you know, on Cap and what they believe, if he was good enough or this, that, and the other. And obviously my opinion was, you know, I think he was definitely good enough to be on a roster, you know, these past couple of years. I'm not going to sit here and name, you know, other quarterbacks around the league that I thought he was better than, but, you know, there's definitely, I don't understand why, you know, he hasn't been signed. He could easily have even been a backup. And honestly, you know, the reason behind it, and I don't like thinking like this, but I can't think of any other way. You know, the NFL, you know, ownership is 30. I believe, you know, I saw it the other day. I think it's 30 white men. And then I think it's 2 that kind of break the mold. Right. And it's like I said, you know, I hope that's not the intentions, because I really like to see the good in people. But then again, you know, you look at the things that are going around in our world, and it's just, you know, it's really disheartening. And so I believe that he was, you know, more than good enough to be on an NFL roster. And I think the fact that, you know, he took a knee and he was standing for what was right and he was just doing, you know, a peaceful protest, I think those are the reasons why he wasn't on an NFL roster. So having him signed back, I think, like I said, you know, that in my opinion is taking an action and a step in the right direction, so showing you support, you know, freedom of speech from your players and ultimately, you know, proving what Goodell and the NFL put out on their social media platform and saying, like, we were wrong and we stand with our players.
Yeah, no, listen, there's no question he's been good enough to play. There were a bunch of reasons why he wasn't signed, but I just did want to ask you that question in the time we're in. Justin, we're up against it. We're out of time, but we appreciate your time and your thoughts and your actions this morning. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, I can't thank you guys enough for the time and the, and, you know, just being here. So thank you again.
It was our pleasure, Justin. It really was.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
One of our baseball analysts, Chris Singleton. Chris, thanks for being with us this morning. Lots to get into with you. First and foremost, are you in any way more optimistic now that you saw this latest move by the owners, that there was some movement off their rigid position and they showed some sort of conciliatory package toward the players in their latest proposal?
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. I would say yes. Obviously, the gap was really wide. I was kind of surprised when the owners put out, you know, such an extreme, you know, 40 to 50 games. And, you know, agents and people that, you know, I'm friends with and talk to, they expected, you know, a very aggressive, you know, counter offer back from the Players Association, which, you know, was up over 100, you know, was it 110, 114 games, whatever it was. But, you know, we're getting close, I think, to, you know, the time, the clock. You know, baseball doesn't have a clock, right, during a, you know, games and everything else. But right now they're working off of a clock because they understand we got to get back. If we're going to do this, we got to get back in July. And, you know, we initially had heard, you know, July 4th would be a great launch date. Not sure if they're going to hit that mark. If they are going to hit that mark, because you're going to need 18 to 21 days sort of a spring training to get ready. If you would even think about hitting the July 4th mark, you got to get something done by, you know, the end of this weekend or what have you. So, even if a July 10th, you're still looking, you know, within about a week or so that it's got to get done. So like the game of chicken, right? It's all good until you get close. And I think we're getting close in terms of the timetable. Then we're going to see the compromises that, are necessary for them to get back on the playing field.
So putting your mitten ball cap back on and being a player, what do you think of this deal from Major League Baseball? Would you accept it? If not, what changes would you make?
Well, there's so many different angles, Mike, and there's just there are different angles. They're players at different positions in their career, their careers, their salaries. So you'd have to kind of position yourself to say, where am I at in my career? You know, what am I looking at in terms of salary? What's my, you know, risk benefit in terms of an abbreviated season? What's my health look like in terms of, you know, anything underlying conditions that, you know, I may have? And I don't really think about this because you think, oh, you know, Major League Baseball players, all these guys are super healthy, you know, but I've been made aware over the last month or so that, you know, certain players that have compromised, you know, immune systems to some degree. And then I thought back, I remember having a teammate, Jason Johnson's a pitcher, is a diabetic. And, you know, you start thinking all of a sudden, wait, we're not like these just, you know, immortals, that are playing the game. There are guys that are performing at a high level that still have, certain health concerns. And then it's a matter as well, what's going on in my family. So there's so much to consider, but if I was just to sort of try to make it simple and think back to, you know, my journey, I'd be sitting there saying, yeah, okay, let's go. We've been sitting home too long. I think we're pretty close. You know, I'll take the risk. Let's go for it. But, you know, that would only be me. And I would have to respect for sure everybody else's, you know, position and what their comfort level is. But I tell you what, I mean, there's so many things beyond just the number of games. You know, what's the prorated salary? We're talking about the working conditions. Is every team going to have the protocol to the level to, you know, try to keep, you know, things very clean and very sanitary and all that? And is there any way that a player, if there is a problem, could they have any recourse to the team? I mean, there's just a lot there, man. There's a lot. And I have baseball fans and people that they can't understand why are they not playing, why. And it's complicated. And it's not just for right now. What the terms and the tone that gets set right now is also going to roll over into the end of 2021 or so when the collective bargaining agreement expires.
And I think all of that is complicated and colored this conversation in such a way that you're right, makes it super complicated. So I guess for me, it boils down to this. Do you see, or if you are the players, is there any world where you're looking and saying you're taking any less than your prorated salary for the amount of games played? Is there any version of a pay cut that you anticipate the players being willing to take in all of this?
I don't think so. I think that's the sticking point because the uncertainty of let's just say, hey, they go out, they play 30 games into it, and this thing starts to spread, and you got to pull the plug. So then, what are you looking at? You're looking at back to nothing. So I think, in my opinion, I think the sticking point is if we're going in, we got to get our prorated salaries. You know, playoffs, whatever. However that's going to go, but we need some type of guarantee in a year where the guarantees really weren't quite there. This is, you know, sort of that one, that semblance of, all right, we've got a guarantee. We know this as long as we're able to play the games.
Well, that's, yeah, Chris Singleton with us, our Major League Baseball analyst, as we're trying to figure out how to play the games in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, we're also trying to figure out how to sort of course correct as a society as we're seeing what's going on across the country and, quite frankly, amazingly, across the world with the demonstrations in so many cities internationally after the killing of George Floyd and what that has sparked in this country, just another list in a long line of abuses by men of color and people of color at the hands of police in this country. Chris, as a man of color, how have you sort of taken in everything that's gone on over the last 2 weeks or so?
Well, I would say for me personally, I really try to unplug a bit from, there's, you know, so much noise and there's so much chatter. And, you know, I believe there are powerful people, powerful structures that don't truly want us to unite and for people to live well together. I think that, you know, unfortunately there are certain outlets of media that want to drive hate and division, all while saying we want unity. And it frustrates me. It really does, because I know that we have some awful things that happen. And as a person of color, yeah, I've experienced things, you know, over the course of my life. And, you know, high school, I was falsely arrested. I was at gunpoint, face down in the middle of the road. And, you know, white town where I went to high school, two buddies of mine arrested, taken to jail. Charges were dropped because they had the wrong guys. And, you know, that stuff happens. That night could end it differently for me, bury it differently. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, you're in a dark road back in a valley and you're given instructions over a loudspeaker of how to get out of a car, and hearing over the loudspeaker, you make one wrong effing move and I'll blow your head off. As a 17-year-old kid, man, you're seeing your life flash in front of your eyes. So we didn't have social media. We didn't have, you know, phones that recorded things, and there was no one around anyway. So that night could have really gone south for me and for my buddies. But, you know, by the grace of God, it didn't. But with that said, that's not how, you know, my life's been marked. You know, there've been other, you know, good encounters with police officers. There's been some that haven't been so great, but you know, I've got to look at the positive. I've got to look at the wonderful people I've been so blessed to have in my life since I was a kid, raised by a single mom, to have white men that took a position of father. They were coaches. They were mentors. You know, I've been blessed and helped by so many different kinds of people that I'm not going to allow some of these things that are happening to create, you know, divide. You know, I'm looking to build bridges. I'm looking to focus on, hey, how we can come together even in a better way. And what I'm so, it's just, you know, at times I'm overwhelmed because our life, my kids' lives, there's so much diversity. And there we got kids in and out of our house, every color, staying the night, all this stuff. I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. And what I experience is great. And I know that's not what everyone experiences, But I think somehow, one by one, if we can continue to grow a familiarity in terms of people that look differently than us and have different backgrounds, then that can spread even more to other parts of society and then ultimately impact, you know, these areas that we're kind of dealing with right now. So that's my take on it.
Chris, we appreciate your take. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your honesty. Thanks for being with us, my friend. And as always, be well and be safe. Okay?
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Golic.
Makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today.
And we're delighted to be joined now by South Carolina football coach, head coach Will Muschamp. Coach, we appreciate you being with us. Obviously, as I said, there's a lot you're dealing with right now, but you had your team and you marched with them in South Carolina up to the state capitol this past weekend. What was the thought process behind that, and what do you think it meant for your team to see you marching with them?
Well, Mike and Trey, first of all, I appreciate you guys having me on here. But, you know, it's easy to do the right thing. My dad raised me by saying that, and that was the right thing to do, to stand up for the racial inequality that we've got going on in our country right now. And that's what our players needed. And we're going to continue to educate and communicate with them on the things that they feel like that we need to take a stand on. And there was no doubt about it that we were taking a stand on this one.
You know, players I know started to come in last week as voluntary workouts that start to get going. What was there the team discussion before the protest and the march that you guys had? What went on before that?
Well, we had three Zoom meetings last week. One is a team, and I expressed to them that my wife and I, Carol, we're gonna march on Friday during a peaceful protest here in Columbia. And I invited the guys and said, if you want to come. And it turns out our entire team showed up. We also voted, registered to vote on Friday, which I think is really important. We had two guest speakers. I.S. Levy Johnson's a friend of mine here in Columbia that was a part of the 1960 civil rights movements. And, you know, he emphasized to our football team, you need to register to vote because that's your voice. That's the opportunity for you to have a voice and have a say-so on what's going on to help the system. And Reverend Charles Jackson Sr., who's been from Columbia, has been a pastor at a church here for 49 years and has lived through the racism and the different things. And both of these guys are pillars in our community. And they talk to our team about their experiences because I think a lot of what we've got to do is educate our guys about the past in order to help them with our future.
Talking to Will Muschamp, South Carolina's head football coach. And going forward, you mentioned registering guys to vote. Was there anything else that came up in conversation of things that guys wanted to focus on as the team went forward? Or was this, you know, still a lot of listening and, as you said, educating that had to go on?
Well, I would say that, you know, listening and educating, and I think more than anything, educating our guys about the past. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, fortunately for me, my dad was a history teacher. So I you know, if we weren't playing sports or watching sports, we were talking about history, whether it's World War I, World War II, or the Civil Rights Movement. So I know a lot about those times and what we went through as a country. And it was interesting that both Mr. Johnson and Pastor Jackson both, you know, emphasized how far we have come since 1960. But we still have a long ways to go. That's the bottom line. And it's disappointing and sad that in 2020 we're having these conversations. But those are conversations that we need to be having right now.
Will Muschamp with us, South Carolina head coach. And when we had Jeremy Pruitt on earlier, coach, he said in the Zoom call and getting together with his players, there was a lot of anger that just needed to be sort of vented and dealt with. Did you find that with your players as well, that they just needed to have the conversation, they needed to let people know how they're feeling?
I think that there was several emotions that I heard, and anger would probably be number one, frustration number two, fear would probably be number three. I mean, just to be honest with you, with our football team, and you know, so those, there was a lot of emotions running. I mean, we started the meeting at 10. I think we got done after 12:30, so it was a 2.5-hour Zoom meeting with our team, and guys expressed all kind of different emotions, but those would be probably the top three.
Will Muschamp, coach at South Carolina, join us here on Golic and Wingo. Then there's obviously this part of it, which has been taking over the country and really the world, but also something else taking over the country and the world is the global pandemic, the coronavirus. So can you talk to us about that, players coming in and how they were tested, and were there any positive, and how that plan has all gone?
Well, again, I think we've got a really good plan in place. We've got our guys traveling in clusters. It's not about side of the ball or position. It's about who they live with. So we're trying to limit the exposure that they have to the unknown so that they're only around the guys that they live with. So we're traveling in clusters of 4 to 5. They come in the building together. We check their symptoms, their temperature. We tested everybody for COVID-19 last week and the antibodies test. And then we had to re-physical our entire football team just because they've had so much time off to make sure that they pass the physicals. You know, we're not going to, you know, our policy here at South Carolina, we're not going to discuss if we had a positive, we didn't have a positive. So, but we do have a plan in place and a protocol if we do have a positive at some point. But guys are coming in the weight room. We've got 4 different lift groups. We've got a 20,000 square foot weight room, so we've got plenty of room to get about 20, 25 guys in there at a time. We got 4 different groups that we're working right now, and we sanitize the weight room after they leave. They come in the building. They're not showering the building. They come in their workout clothes. They go work out and run, and then they leave the building on the other end, and we sanitize anywhere they've ever been. So I think we have a really good plan in place to battle this thing.
Coach Muschamp, so much of these plans that you guys in the schools and the conferences have been working on for so long leading up to this rollout now. So I'm just curious, what went into the thought process for you guys of not wanting to disclose the names of anyone that tested positive through the course of this?
Well, I've had several parents reach out to me from a confidentiality standpoint. There's HIPAA laws in effect that you've got to respect as well. So that was just kind of to me. I had some parents reach out, and they personally just said they didn't want their sons to be named or even if there was numbers of people. So that's why we decided that.
And again, parents are going to be a big part of this whole process going forward in college football, because that is a layer that is not in professional sports, but it is a huge part of what we see in college football as you're sort of shepherding their kids through their experience while they're on campus. Will Muschamp with us, South Carolina football coach, son of a history teacher, which I did not know. I learned mm-hmm. something today. So I'm learning something. Everybody's learning something as we go through all this, I'm a huge fan of history. So I thought that was very cool. The other thing that's part of this is how we're going to go about playing the games. And, you know, we see different states, coach, saying different things. We now have the governor of Texas saying he believes that stadiums in the fall could be up to 50% capacity. What is South Carolina expecting, and what are they planning in terms of what might be available to them when we play and how many people might be in the stands?
Well, Coach Tanner, our athletic director, I think he's got a bunch of different models set and ready to go in place. I think the virus is going to determine that, and it depends on how we continue to move forward. And we've got a great plan in June for the social distancing in our building and how we're working in clusters. And they're kind of come out with a model with the NCAA of how we're going to go into July of meeting with our players. And now, eventually, guys, we're going to have to get in the huddle. I mean, we're going to have to get close to each other at some point. So how will that change when that happens? And so I think that the virus is going to determine all of that, depending on how, if we have a spike, if we don't have a spike, and how we continue to move forward.
So, and that's exactly where I was going to go. At some point, you got to get in the huddle. At some point, guys have to hit one another. That's just the nature of the sport. So if everything follows according to plan and there's not a spike and you go according to everything laid out, when in that plan would guys actually be in pads playing football?
Well, again, I think based on the models that I've seen from NCAA, that we won't be in pads till August, and that's when we report, which actually we're set to report on August 6th and have our first practice on August 7th. But there will be some form of walkthroughs in July that we're going to be able to do, and obviously some player-run practices that we always have in the summers to be able to go and compete against each other and get ourselves ready for camp. So I think those things will edge into July, and we'll see how it goes.
Coach, I'm curious because you mentioned the NCAA a couple of times and the models that they have and some of those. How much is the conversation with, you know, the folks at the NCAA about what they're knowing, what the officials with the SEC and with your guys' conference are saying and the school? How much communication is there with all of those levels for you guys right now?
Well, that's more on a commissioner level. Commissioner Sankey does a fantastic job for us here in the Southeastern Conference. And we actually have been meeting as head coaches on Zoom once a week to discuss things that we feel like are important and express them to Commissioner Sankey, and he relays those messages to the NCAA, and they've got an oversight group that works for football with the return to play model that we're trying to work off of. So we're just trying to give them as much input as we can give, the things that we feel like we need to, to help our players put them in the best situation and the safest situation that we can as we approach fall camp.
Well, it certainly sounds like there's a plan in place at South Carolina, and it certainly feels like there is a unified front going forward on how to deal with everything that's going on in the world with you marching with your players over the weekend. Coach, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your insights. We appreciate your perspective as the son of a history teacher. And thanks for being with us this morning, honestly.
Hey, if we can talk football, we can talk history. Either one, I'm pretty good at both.
That's there awesome. Coach, thanks, we Coach. Appreciate your time. Best of luck going forward. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Y'all take care. Thank you, Trey. Thank you, Mike.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.